From KCRW, I'm Bob Carlson, and this is Unfictional. Unfictional is a program of true stories, personal documentaries, and radio movies. And all this season, we've been featuring stories about perception and seeing the world the way someone else does. On this episode, it's the kind of a story that's in the journey, not the destination. And in this case, it's a journey on a Greyhound bus with a whole bunch of juggalos on a mission. They call themselves the most hated family in the world. So Unfictional managing producer Carla Green took a 3-day Greyhound bus trip to find out why. And she came back at least 40% juggalo. From KCRW, it's Unfictional.
There's someone I'd like you to meet.
Yeah, I'm not even going to say it. But
say what? His name is Roger.
Not like, I was going to say, yeah, this is the part where we smoked a joint at our interview, but like, I don't want to like have them go over the tape and get you in trouble, but I'm sure you can edit that shit.
I wouldn't get in trouble. My bosses don't care if I smoke a joint. Fucking legal in California. No, I'm good. I'm a lightweight.
Yeah. We're not in California anymore, though.
Roger and I are standing, hidden, in the elbow of a rest stop somewhere between Utah and Denver. It's dark all around us, except for this one fluorescent light that's buzzing nearby. At this point, we're about halfway through a 3-day Greyhound trip across the country. Roger is a stocky guy from New Jersey in his 20s. He wears baggy jeans and baggy t-shirts, skater boy shoes. He's not a big talker. He'll often choose silence over speech, especially when he thinks my questions are stupid, which he often does. But before I knew any of that, Roger and I met.
Hello.
On the phone.
Hi, is this Clara?
Carla?
Oh, Carla, I'm sorry.
And Roger, not sure about me.
I don't know who you are, so like I don't really want to like answer questions about a lot of my plans and stuff.
Finally, we make a deal. He'll call my editor at KCRW to confirm that I work there. Then he'll believe I'm not an FBI agent. And then we can talk. He calls, we talk. He tells me his plans, and I buy a ticket to take a bus across the country with him. A couple days later, when I arrive at the station, I can't find Roger anywhere. I text and I call, convinced that he's ditched me. And then he calls. He spent the night at the station. He'll be right there. We get on the bus. I have never taken a bus across the country before, let alone with a stranger I met on the phone. But I'm doing it because the stranger is Roger. And I'd been hoping, praying that someone like Roger would call. Because Roger, like pretty much everyone else you're going to hear from in this story, is a juggalo. If you've heard anything about juggalos, you might have heard that they paint their faces like clowns. Or maybe you've heard that they don't get how magnets work.
Look around, it's all astounding. Water, fire, air, and dirt. Fucking magnets, how do they work? And I don't want to talk to a scientist. Y'all motherfuckers lying and getting me pissed.
These are the things that leak out of juggalo culture into the mainstream. This confusing jumble of stuff that sounds totally bonkers. But if you spend some time with juggalos, the logic of the culture starts to reveal itself. It starts to make sense. So let's start with the basics. Juggalos are a group of people knitted together by their love of a rap duo called Insane Clown Posse, or ICP. When I'm coming, I get silly, like something lace my filly. That is where the clown face paint comes from. The two members of ICP paint their own faces like clowns. Shaggy and Violent J are their names. They're both white guys from Detroit. Juggalos are known for being a pretty overwhelmingly white group of people. And ICP's music is a genre called horrorcore. It's as violent as it is absurdist. It's not for everyone. But if it's for you, it's really for you. Me and my axe will leave your head outlined in Roger first discovered ICP's music in a carpool when he was a teenager. It spoke to him right away. When do you think that you really became a juggalo?
I'd say when I was about 16 or 17.
But so we don't have to talk about this right now if it's too personal, but when you say that the songs talked about like abused kids and stuff, was that your personal experience?
My mom ditched me in New Jersey when I was 3 and then moved to Seattle, and she probably just wasn't responsible enough to care for her kid. So my dad and my stepmom a lot of the time raised me, and my dad like always drank heavily and did a lot of stupid shit when he was drunk, so stuff that parents do. Around 15 or so, I started getting into fist fights with my dad and stuff, and then I was homeless and on the street when I was 17.
Roger's story is not uncommon among Juggalos. And the fact of Juggalo culture being totally weird, the fact of it not being for everyone, that's the point.
People just hate on them. Like, ICP is the most hated band in the world, so of course Juggalos are going to be the most hated family in the world, probably.
But why?
Because we're different, and real Juggalos give no fucks.
There's this pretty high barrier to entry to being accepted as a Juggalo. You have to get it. You have to lean into the weirdness, want to be hated. Be down with the clown, as the Juggalos say.
What is a Juggalo? Let me think for a second. He gets butt naked.
But once you're there, Juggalos have this culture of radical acceptance. I've never really seen anything like it. For one thing, the vibe at ICP shows is just so earnest and warm, caring. One time, I saw a guy using a wheelchair in an ICP mosh pit. People with visible disabilities, pretty common sight at these shows. And that vibe is all the more striking against the backdrop of the music, which is fun, but also still horrorcore, still often violent. But if you're there, that means you're down. So people trust you, inherently. It's kind of utopian, but can also be exhausting for someone like me, who stops going to a coffee shop if the baristas learn my name. Sometimes, when a big group of Juggalos gets together, they burst out chanting, family, just like this. Because that's how they think of themselves. If you're a Juggalo, no matter who you are or what you believe in, you're family. Of course, Juggalos aren't just a family. They're the most hated family in the world. Juggalos are really easy to hate on. And sometimes they give as good as they get. If you haven't heard what happened to Tila Tequila at the gathering of the Juggalos, Google it. I am the kind of person who can't deal with people being mad at me, let alone hating me. So Juggalos loving being hated, choosing it, that's wild to me. I wanted to understand it. And also, I wanted to get a look at the dissonance between the love and care Juggalos show each other and their give no fucks, I don't care if you hate me attitude towards pretty much everyone else. There's one more thing you need to know. The reason Roger and I were going on this bus trip. We were going to Washington, D.C. to a protest against the FBI. Because according to the FBI, Juggalos aren't a family. They're a gang.
Insane Clown Posse and their followers known as the Juggalos.
D.C. is no stranger to protests, but this weekend might be a first Juggalos.
To make a long story short, back in 2011, the FBI added Juggalos to a list, calling them a, quote, loosely classified hybrid gang. They cite a couple times Juggalos were convicted of violent crimes. One FBI file from 2008 has California Juggalos in a war with MS-13, the international gang known for being one of the most dangerous in the world. Lots of free speech advocates have said that classifying Juggalos as a gang was baseless. Violates their First Amendment right to like whatever kind of music they want to. The ACLU took ICP's case to court to fight the gang classification, where they subsequently lost. And the gang thing wasn't just about being put on a list. It meant that Juggalos could suffer the consequences of being gang affiliates. It could get them put in solitary confinement in prison. Roger says he's seen the effects firsthand.
Cops and stuff put a lot of brainwashing out there, and a lot of people eventually believe negative things about us or whatever, so they just try to harass us more.
And then there's the fact that Roger has actually been in and out of prison, where they've classified him as a gang member. He doesn't wear Juggalo face paint, but he does have a Juggalo tattoo of the logo of ICP's record company. He wears ICP shirts. If you know what they look like, it's obvious that Roger's a Juggalo.
A lot of white boys that are Juggalos that go to state prison get scared, and then they'll join Aryan gangs. So they wrote in my parole report that I'm a suspected white supremacist.
Did that disappoint you that a lot of Juggalos join the Aryan gang when they get to prison?
Yeah, it really did piss me off because it makes people like me look bad. And now everywhere I go in the country, if I get my name ran by a cop, it says in their system that I'm a gang member and shit like that.
When you take a bus across the country, you learn some things about yourself, but mostly about bus trips across the country. For one thing, it's impossibly long. It's loud and uncomfortable. You're constantly getting on and off the bus so that they can service it. So the whole trip feels like a hazy blur of droning bus noise and fluorescent-lighted Greyhound stations, where you can't quite fall asleep in the plastic bucket seats because you might miss the announcement telling you to line up and get back on the bus.
You know how people talk about, like, when you're running a marathon and you, like, pass the moment of, like, where it seems unbearable and then it gets really easy? Is there a part of the bus ride where it gets really easy?
Nah, it's always difficult being on a fucking Greyhound.
From the beginning to the end?
Yeah.
You're not giving me much hope, man.
I told you you should have flown.
This was my first time Greyhound busing across the country, but it wasn't Roger's. Not even close. And at pretty much every stop along the way, Roger had a story to tell.
New Jersey kept on locking me up for this one warrant, and I had a bunch of complications getting locked up for petty crimes. Got locked up in Las Vegas, got extradited back to New Jersey. Some cops pulled us over and found that I had a warrant in Philadelphia. Long story short, I had to spend a total of 12 months in the Philadelphia prison system for that.
I start to realize why Roger might want to be part of the most hated family in the world. If you feel like everyone's against you, being hated on your own terms, it's freeing. A way to make sense of things. And maybe a self-fulfilling prophecy. Because I start to notice that Roger approached the world in this kind of defensive crouch, ready for the blows that he knew would eventually land. Sometimes he'd lash out first, just in case. Tied to him as I was, sometimes the blows started to glance off of me. And people pleaser that I am, they affected me more than they seemed to affect Roger. At one stop, a team of cops gets on the bus. It's not exactly clear what they're looking for. Maybe drugs. They ask me a couple of questions, look twice at my recorder, and then they move on. But when they get to Roger, it almost instantly becomes a confrontation. He doesn't trust them, doesn't want to answer their questions about where he's going or why. The cops get suspicious of him. He's already obviously suspicious of them. I wonder if they're going to pull him off the bus. I wonder if I should try to intervene. After looking him over and discussing amongst themselves, the cops decide Roger's not a threat, just a punk. They move on. Fucking cops, he mutters to me. I breathe out. Another stop. As we're getting back on the bus, the driver admonishes us. We had a 15-minute break. It's been 15 minutes. Roger is in front of me, and he talks back to the driver. Something like, chill the fuck out, man. The driver gets angry. You better tell him to calm the fuck down or you're out of here, he yells at me. My heart starts racing as I walk back to our seats. I look at Roger as I sit down. He looks back at me like, what? When we get to Kansas City, another Juggalo gets on the bus. No face paint, but he's got an ICP shirt on, clearly heading to the march. He's a young guy, can't be older than 20, with spiky hair and wraparound reflective glasses. Right away, there's something about him that strikes me as weird. But Roger doesn't seem to notice, or maybe he just doesn't care. He's excited to meet him, invites him to sit with us. For hours, days at this point, I have been trying to get Roger to open up. It's been a struggle. Sometimes he'll answer my questions with a single word, or not at all. I try to give him a little audio recorder to tape his own thoughts throughout the trip. No dice. "I don't need this," he says, handing it back to me. But with the new Juggalo, Roger is more animated than I have ever seen him. He becomes the question asker, even though the new Juggalo is even more standoffish with Roger than Roger has been with me, which I wasn't sure was possible. He's not answering any of Roger's questions in a straightforward way. After hours of trying to make conversation, Roger finally decides to ask the new Juggalo to switch seats. He moves to one directly in front of us. I keep noticing him peering back at me through the gap in the seats. About half an hour later, I see him scratching answers into a test booklet, using what looks like his own blood as ink. We don't talk to the new Juggalo after that. At rest stop after rest stop, 10, then 20 hours into the trip, Roger and I develop a routine. I go inside to the bathroom, Roger goes outside to smoke, and then we find each other. Roger texts me if he's worried the bus might leave without me, if I've been in the bathroom too long. We start to trade stories from our lives, and I feel like he's starting to relax. You've probably noticed at this point that Roger and I don't have that much in common. We both grew up in the tri-state area. We've both lived in Los Angeles, but that's about where any similarity in our lives ends. Still, despite everything, I start to feel close to Roger, protective of him. At one point, he tells me that you can't trust the lamestream media. "What about me?" I ask. "You're not the mainstream media," he says slowly, like I'm a bit dumb. "I've never heard of your radio station." I decide not to fight him on it.
This is Unfictional from KCRW, and Carla Green's Juggalo journey continues in a moment. From KCRW, I'm Bob Carlson, and Carla Green's journey on a bus to Washington, D.C. with a whole bunch of protesting Juggalos continues. It's Unfictional.
Roger and other Juggalos like to say that they're a family of outcasts against hatred and bigotry.
"It's a family of outcasts against hatred and bigotry."
That phrase, "family of outcasts against hatred and bigotry," comes partly from ICP's own stance on bigots, which is firmly anti. They rap a lot about racists and bigots dying violently. They've burned Confederate flags on stage. They've actually got a song from their very first album called "Your Rebel Flag," about the Confederate flag and how it's bad. There are Juggalos who don't believe this stuff at all, who are actual white supremacists. But then there are what seems like the majority of Juggalos, Juggalos like Roger, who do, I think, mean it, or at least want to mean it, when they say they hate racists and bigots. At one point, Roger told me that the KKK had an active presence in the town he grew up in, that he hates the KKK, hated that they were in his town and what they believed in. The thing is, a lot of Juggalos grew up poor, just like the two members of ICP. A lot of Juggalos relate personally to ICP songs about child abuse or neglect, relate to the feeling of being hated, rejected by the world. But I don't get the sense that most Juggalos relate personally to the racism stuff. Partly, of course, because, again, most Juggalos are white. And sometimes I'd hear Roger or other Juggalos say things, repeat some dogma about immigrants, for example, that to me is not standing against hatred and bigotry. Before I tell you what happened next, you need to know something about me. I'm kind of impossible. When I was 18, I became a vegetarian, and convinced of the righteousness of my own vegetarianism, I decided that it was my responsibility to try to convince everyone in my life to follow suit, including my then septuagenarian father and my then boyfriend, who was French. I like to be right, but more than that, I like to share that righteousness with the people around me, which sometimes, unfortunately, takes the form of browbeating. I'm working on it. But when Roger and I get to Pittsburgh and we sit down by the river to talk and the conversation turns to politics, I start to argue with him.
You don't have to give me an answer right now, but just think about what I'm saying about
that. I am thinking
this.
About what you're saying. Like,
which journalists are not supposed to do. But I did.
Immigrants who are fucking you over. That's old people.
Yeah, exactly. But you just switched the fucking subject on me.
Why?
You're making me think you're going to go back in there and edit it so that it sounds like...
None of this is going to... I'll turn the recorder off. None of this is going to go in the piece. None of this is relevant to the piece.
I turn off the recorder. We sit there in smoldering silence for a moment. I get this sinking feeling that I've ruined everything. Then we walk up the hill to the Greyhound station to get back on the bus again. When we finally arrive at the march, it's this chaotic, colorful mess of juggalos and all their paraphernalia. There's Faygo, the soda made in Detroit, where ICP is from. Faygo is a big part of juggalo culture. At their shows, ICP wheels out these giant barrels filled with bottles of Faygo, shakes them up and sprays them at the crowd like tiny soda bottle rockets. Juggalos love it. And, of course, there are hundreds of people with their faces painted like clowns.
Let's march, motherfuckers!
As the speeches end and the actual protest is supposed to begin, the crowd forms into a knot of confusion. Nobody knows which direction to start marching.
Hey, which way do we go?
And when the juggalos do eventually start marching, it becomes painfully obvious that this is not a group of people used to protesting. At first, it's hard to figure out what exactly is wrong, until I realize nobody's chanting. Everyone's just marching in silence. Finally, someone with a megaphone starts a chant, but it's an awkward one. Maybe one she just thought up on the spot.
Music is not a crime! Clown the police, Nate! Fuck the FBI! I said, fuck the FBI!
It catches on unevenly. The juggalos keep marching. As the protest winds down, I meet back up with Roger.
All right. Hi.
Hi.
He's changed his clothes, put on a fresh ICP shirt and a matching bandana. He's tired and grumpy. I'm tired and grumpy. Somehow, everything I'm asking him is a yes or no question.
What does any of this shit have to do with that interview?
Yeah. Like, I don't know. You have anything else you want to say before I turn the recorder off?
I don't think so.
I walk away, find some other juggalos to talk to.
ICP! ICP! ICP!
Standing around in front of the Lincoln Memorial, I interview one juggalo, a big guy, who's come to the march with his kids. As we talk, he tells me that he's a Trump supporter and that he's got a Confederate flag at home. The same Confederate flag that ICP's talking about in that song, Your Rebel Flag.
I mean, I'm not even going to front. I got a rebel flag in my house. It's not about racism. I mean, I have it because it was my grandfather's. And that's the only reason that I still got it, because it was my grandfather's. I didn't get much from him.
What do you think the reaction would be if you had brought your grandfather's rebel flag to this march?
Oh, I honestly would let him burn it. I mean, it's a respect thing. I mean, you know, if people hate it, it's their choice to hate it.
So that wouldn't bother you if they burned your grandfather's?
I wouldn't have brought my grandfather's, but I would have brought another one just to burn, because I know damn well there's going to be one burned tonight.
Yeah, and that's fine with you?
That's fine. It don't hurt my feelings, none. Don't burn the American flag, and I don't care.
Juggalos that support Trump, it's like that drunk uncle in your family.
True.
He's still your family, and you love him, but he just says some dumb stuff sometimes.
This is a group of people who call themselves the Struggalos, or Struggalo Circus. They're left-wing, anti-racist juggalos, anarchist and anti-capitalist. Definitely more left-wing than the average juggalo. For them, the hatred and bigotry stuff is something they think about deeply, try to live by, not just an intention or a lyric in a beloved song. They know about the racist strain of Juggalo culture, and they would, of course, like to change it. But leftists have things to learn from Juggalos too, they say. Because the flip side of being a hated family is this intense and unyielding Juggalo love. Juggalos know what it's like to be cast aside, and for the most part, they don't do that to each other. Kitty Stryker is a co-founder of the Struggalos.
And when I'm in leftist spaces, especially in the Bay Area, I am always having to be on point, especially as a public person. I can never fuck up, ever. But when I'm amongst Juggalos, I'll fuck up and everyone will chant at me, "You fucked up," and it's very jovial and happy, and there's this acceptance of failure. And I think that, like, what I learned through Juggalos is that acceptance of making mistakes and growing from them rather than getting stuck or being ostracized.
And the Struggalos also say that once Juggalos accept you as family, it rises above even the most deeply held prejudices. Like, here's Rich Williams. He's a black guy from Oakland, another co-founder of the Struggalos, who's been a Juggalo since he was a kid.
Back in 2012, when I went to the gathering of the Juggalos, I actually did, like, you know, encounter a few, you know, skinhead Juggalos. I actually did encounter them. You know, at first, you know, when I saw, you know, like, the swastika tattoos and everything, I was immediately just, like, you know, just, like, fearful. But I was just, like, at the same time, just, like, you know what? In case anything pops off, you ready? But then they just came up to me and they were like, "Hey, what's up, dude?" And I was like, just like looking around like, "You're talking to me?"
And you ended up hanging out with them?
Yeah, I was actually like, had like a full-blown conversation with them. And I was just like, "Oh my God, I can't believe I just talked to a skinhead for like about like 20 minutes. Dude, this is crazy." And did not get into one fight. And he didn't call me and he didn't drop the N-bomb not one time.
Was that the first time you'd ever talked to a skinhead?
Very first time. And let me rephrase that. Very first time without violence breaking out. Let's just put it like that.
When I finish interviewing the Struggalos, they invite my photographer and me to hang out, have a beer. We squeeze together, all six of us, on the two double beds of their hotel room. It's nice. It's been a long week. They're really warm, friendly people. Roger and I still talk sometimes. He gives me little updates on his life. As I was working on a draft of this story, he texted me, "Is that interview ever going to come out, Carla? Lol." A couple weeks after the march, Insane Clown Posse had a show in Santa Ana, about an hour from where I live. Tickets were $25. ICP tends to keep their shows affordable, purposefully. I went. I could say it was research for this story, and even though there's a nugget of truth in there, that is basically a lie. I went because, ever since we left the march, I'd been listening to ICP songs. I wanted to go. Here is one last thing you need to know about me. Anytime I'm in a crowd, I try my very best to hold myself apart from it. It's probably part of why I've chosen a job where I'm usually holding a mic between myself and any group that might have me. When ICP went on that night, basically everyone in the venue jumped into the mosh pit. I didn't. But I did come down from the balcony. I stood there, back against the wall, inches from the mosh pit. When the barrels of Faygo bottles came out, I got drenched, just like everybody else. And for me, that's something. Come on, and with this magic, I introduce to you an occult sorcerer of the ancient craft of necromancy, a caster of mind-bending illusion from the nether void of the Shadow Walker. Excel from sand, you're live, the
Friends in Juggalo Places was produced by Carla Green and edited by Nick White and myself. It was mixed by Mike Dodge Weisskopf. And there are some great photos taken during this story by Woodrow Curry. You can find those, along with all our stories so far this season, at kcrw.com/unfictional. I'm Bob Carlson, the producer of Unfictional. The managing producer is Carla Green. The editor is Nick White. Theme music by Alex Weston, with music help from Joe Augustine and Narrative Music. The Whistler is Jonathan May. On the next episode of Unfictional, just what does it take to break apart a friendship?
It never occurred to me that he would put something in my drink, never in a million years, even after what came next.
I'm Bob Carlson. Please subscribe to this program wherever you listen to your podcasts, and join me next time for Unfictional on KCRW.